Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, nice. Yeah. But like in a real like studio and everything.
In our dorm room.
yeah.
With the keyboard in.
Nice.
We had a soundboard and stuff.
Was this Pen?
Yeah, this was our Pen.
What was the name of this podcast?
It was called Sip Radio. It was
Sip Radio?
Exactly.
Was alcohol involved?
No. Not the show itself.
Not officially.
Not officially, though. Unofficially. But it was an acronym for my friend Stefan. I'm Isaiah. My other buddy was Paul.
Oh,
so
nice.
It was the three of us. We hosted it, yeah.
You guys should do a reunion show.
Oh, we want to.
I have to interject because he said, oh, we just brought people in from around. It was always women. They only viewed women.
I see. I see what's happening.
The first episode had Joshua Bennett, world-renowned poet. Second episode had, see?
Welcome to Joblogs, a podcast that features candid conversations with young professionals about work, life, and everything in between.
Hi, I'm Joy Marie.
And I'm Courtney.
Thanks for tuning in again. If you're new, you can consider us your career confidants, girlfriends, group chat. We're in your corner.
Yeah, we're here to give you the real on this whole career kerfuffle that we all do.
I love that word. That is an excellent word. Tweet us and say hi. If you're new to the show or listening from the UK,
yeah.
We're new and noteworthy on iTunes in the UK.
Oh, hi.
Say holla. Tweet us. Say hello. Be sure to also check us out at joblogs.com, incredible resource with articles that'll help you on your journey, topics from, you know, dealing with micro inequities to building a vision for your life. Awesome resource, so check it out. Also,
shout out to Adrian. So we're canceling Adrian's Bay campaign because he's in Alaska.
Our producer is killing it right now, landed a reporting gig in Alaska. We are so proud of him. We mess him around here already, but yeah. Congrats and kudos to him. So yes. Send him your good vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up in today's episode, we're going to be talking about careers in tech, from software engineering to user experience and product management, and the roles key relationships play in entering those fields with a really incredible group of Googlers, past and present.
Yeah, it's a bit of a round table.
Yes.
Having.
So stay tuned for that. But now it's time for our clock in, TikTok. And this is this sort of section, not segment, where we just check on each other's professional growth, how we're doing. I think it's important to do with all of your friend groups. So,
yeah.
What's up?
I'm doing way too much.
Per use.
Just way too much. You guys know I took the month off because I was doing way too much. I continue to do way too much. But for a positive spin on it, I mean, I think I'm in a period of, like, stretching myself.
Mm.
So you got to be careful what you ask the universe for, because I wanted to have a better work ethic. Because I feel like my natural inclination is to be a very lazy person. Like, I would just, I would love to lay.
Sleep
I love
till 11. Yes.
And I just, you know, asked for some, like, help with my initiative and work ethic. And, oh, my God, I got it. Like, I took on, like, a client, like, a freelance client in addition to, like, work and my job. And it's just, like, I'm busy to the point where it's, like, my brain is just always.
Yeah.
Always
occupied.
On.
Yeah. But I would say, I mean, you talk about lazy, but I think that exact statement contradicts that, because we're the type of people, right, we're the type of people who, when there is that idle time, are like, what else can I do?
Yeah, that's real. And I, you know, I do think it's like preparing me, because like when you can't work on something, it kind of like your desire for it increases. So I think like even things I want to do with job logs, things I want to do for myself, like I kind of have the gusto to do that once this period wraps itself up.
Yeah, that's true. That makes sense.
So, yeah, I'm just holding on.
You're killing it, though.
Thank you. Very proud of you.
You're out here doing it.
What about you?
I am good. Same. And also, so on the work front, just wrapped a really big event in San Diego. For those of you who don't know, I'm kind of in the experiential marketing space. So events is sort of what I've been doing for the last couple of years. And it just, you know, every time we do a big event, it makes me think about all of the parallels between like producing an event on the client side and also just like life in general. Because I've found that I am at a place now where it's not stressful. And I was just thinking about it. I'm like, this was like a 300-person event. I'm not stressed about it. I just don't get stressed out about these events anymore. And I think it's because there's so much preparation that happens beforehand from putting together a very detailed production schedule and run of show to literally weekly meetings with our agencies and partners and everybody, vendors and everything, to just go through every single minute, every single detail of the program. To literally when you show up on site, it's just like you show up just to make sure everything's happening.
Yeah.
And so I've just been thinking about where it's appropriate to apply that, because it is a lot of pre-work. But there are a lot of other things in my life where I'm like, because I am a habitual procrastinator. I will. And I promise you, I will wait until the day of, you know, maybe at best the night before to do something when it's due every single time. Mm. And so being in the event space and having to prepare ahead of time has helped me to start applying that to other things in life, you know, like just realizing it's going to take a person 2-3 weeks to get back to me. And then when they get back to me, it's going to take another couple weeks to lock in a meeting, you know, things like that. Like, so instead of waiting till the last minute, trying to do things in advance. But yeah, overall, you know, lots of tips around organization that I've gleaned from that space that I'm just trying to apply to other areas of my life to decrease the stress and sense of urgency that comes with procrastinating.
Right. So now it's time to rant, to rave, to review. This is where we give you our recommendations or our cautions about, you know, services, tools that are impacting our lives, work or otherwise.
Yeah. What are you doing?
I am ranting.
Yay. Wait. The fact that I got so excited. Am I a negative person? What are you ranting about?
I am ranting. We're going to title this You Are Your Timeline.
Okay.
Okay? I'm tired of people complaining about social media. I'm tired of people complaining about all the stuff that they see on social media and how it's ratchet or it's this or it's that. You are really telling on yourself.
I love those posts first thing in the morning. Oh, y'all still talking about X, Y, Z?
You are talking about it. Like, girl... Like, you're telling yourself in your circle. I will never forget, I saw this tweet on this girl said, I don't like LinkedIn. It's too ratchet. How ratchet do you have to be?
Actual tears, what?
To have a ratchet LinkedIn feed. Like, what?
Wait. Stop. What are you talking about?
She just said, like, they're too ratchet. Like, everyone's trying to hook up and blah, blah, blah.
Where?
I'm like, my LinkedIn is not
right. No, that's
like, we are sharing professional development tips. So, social media is customizable, okay? You can shape it to what you want it to be or need it to be. So... for example, I frequently recalibrate, like, my timeline. Like, if I notice, like, I'll notice, like, oh, there's too many women on here. Like, I need a more of a male point of view. Oh, maybe it's too political or it's too pop culture-y. Yes. And, like, you will get a cute unfollow.
Yeah.
Well, if I can't find a new follow to, like, supplement, I'll, you know, trim the fat.
Speaking of which, I'm looking to recalibrate my Twitter timeline.
Yeah.
So if y'all could send me some more global professionals to follow kindly.
Yeah, but it's like that's your, like it's your circle, and I think there's some offline takeaways here as well.
Okay,
like you curate your circle online and offline. So if you have a problem with what's you're surrounding yourself with, you girl look in the mirror and make some adjustments.
That's true.
That's all I'm saying.
That's true.
Rant done.
Well, I also have a rant this week for you. This one comes courtesy of a darling colleague who she knows who she is. Shouts to her.
Oh, my God.
But she came to work and told me a story about a house guest that she received who hit her up out of the blue. I believe the house guest was a friend from elementary or middle school or something like that. They hadn't talked in years. Mama shows up for dinner. Well, to take it back, they couldn't really pan out the plans.
Okay.
So, you know, my colleague is like, okay, well, why don't you just come over for dinner? Oh, Mama shows up for dinner with an overnight bag.
No.
And stays for, like, multiple days.
Excuse me? See, this is why I need concrete.
On the couch.
Plans, itineraries when you show up to me.
But, yeah, you know, and then, like, didn't bring anything to dinner. Was just kind of on the couch.
How do you show up to dinner
with
a preconceived, premeditated plan that this is going to be a weekend affair?
Yeah.
That's rude.
So, right. So, you know, my rant is about the lack of lack of manners. Yes. And overstepping boundaries when it comes to hospitality in particular.
Okay.
This is also adulting because we're over the age where, you know, you come crash on people's couches mm-hmm. indefinitely and such. Like, if you're going to come.
Yeah, that period is done.
It's done. I'm not going back to it. So if you want to work something out, I mean, I am forever indebted to the people who let me crash their couches yes. when I first moved to New York City. So I'll always have an open arm policy. But communication, one, is key.
Yes.
Like, let us hash out the details and be crystal clear. And then, two, when you come, bring something. Don't come empty-handed. You come in to dinner, bring a bottle of wine.
Bring a floral arrangement.
Something. All right, so today we are joined by some incredible techies, Amber, Isaiah, Michael. Hey, y'all.
Hey.
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 So Amber Green is a user experience researcher at Weight Watchers. Her husband, Isaiah Green, who's here with us as well as a product manager at Genius, both recently left their roles at Google in user experience and product management, respectively. Congratulations. And had a couple of really interesting transitions in your background, which we're going to get into.
And then we're also thrilled to be joined by Michael Frederick, who's a staff software engineer at Google, operates as a tech lead and manager on the Google Docs team, which we love. We're scrolling it right now for this episode.
Yes. So welcome all. Welcome, welcome.
Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I know we're going to talk a lot of stuff is going to go on today. But, you know, we always hear about, like, the different tech experience you need to get into this industry. But we want to talk a little bit about, like, the relationship side. Like, what the relationships you need to cultivate and build in? What were the key players in kind of helping you have the career that you have today?
Yeah. You want to start, Michael?
Yeah.
Sure. I think for me, the biggest relationships I had to cultivate were actually during college or even before college mm-hmm. at times to sort of get into the right places at the right times.
Mm.
I had sort of a checkered past, you know.
checkered. That's a colorful word.
Before I sort of, you know, I was kind of in and out of school when I was younger. And then, you know, I sort of started pulling my life together a bit better later on. And it was at that time when I was kind of looking for ways to, you know, get into my career and kind of jumpstart both mm-hmm. my college career and then eventually, you know, my professional career. That's when I needed sort of key people in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and I sort of only realized that now retrospectively.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, who were those people? And I love that because, I mean, I certainly did not coast through college with straight A's. So I can relate to that. And a lot of times you feel defeated when you have, like, failures and mistakes in your past that you feel like you can't bounce back from. So what were kind of, like, who were those people for mm-hmm. you? And then I'd love to hear from you guys as well, just that kind of helped you nudge
along. Sure. So I think the biggest influence on me was a professor. His name was Rick Ord. And he was a professor in, like, kind of one of the introductory computer science classes that mm-hmm. I was involved with. And this is sort of after I had sort of gotten my life back on track and I was in school again and I was at least poised to maybe do well and kind of, you know, get back in the swing of things. But I definitely had a lot of anxiety and sort of fear of not you know, we talk about imposter syndrome a lot. I was in, you know, kind of a high-end university, you know, with a very prominent computer science program, which was great, except that I sort of felt like I wasn't sure if I belonged there. And he was one of the first people who I sort of like, especially as a professor, who I really connected with.
Mm-hmm.
He also helped me get both of my internships in during college.
Okay.
And one of them was with Google, which led to my hire to Google eventually. So
nice. Amber, I want to talk to you because you graduated. Your profile is really interesting because you graduated from Stanford with a degree in public policy. How did you get from there to user experience? Like, how does that even happen? I'm so curious. And you were even at Goldman Sachs and finance. So I'd love to hear about the transition and kind of the key players that help you navigate that.
Yeah. So I started off studying kind of more engineering-related things at Stanford initially. I didn't pick a major.
Okay.
Luckily, we have the quarter system there, so you have a little bit of time. Like, a lot of people end up double majoring or having a minor, and even sometimes when they're doing a computer science or engineering degree, having a minor, which is pretty tough.
Yeah.
Just given all the classes you have to take. So I started off taking a bunch of math and science classes that some were related to if I went specifically into an engineering field, and then some were just core classes that we needed to take. And so I decided against better judgment. I was like, I'm not going to do engineering, actually. My dad had done electrical engineering, and I don't think I was totally against it for that, but I just kind of didn't realize where I was. I didn't realize I was in Silicon Valley. I didn't really know what I could do with a computer science degree or an engineering degree. And so I ended up studying public policy because I thought it was a way for me to blend a lot of things that were interdisciplinary. So I took a lot of math classes because we had to take higher level economics and that kind of stuff. But I also took a class around community-based participatory research. And so I was able to take a lot of different classes that I liked and then put a degree on it. And so I ended up moving into finance later because I was part of a program called MLT, Leadership for Tomorrow. And I did their career prep program. So basically they take students from all across the country. You apply and you're in a year-long program where they help you figure out what is your passion and then how are you going to get an internship based on that passion so that then you can get a position full-time somewhere. So through them, I still didn't necessarily know exactly what I wanted to do, but one of our sponsors was Goldman Sachs, and they had a career day, and they went through and told you about, okay, this is what investment banking is like. Here's a case study. This is what private wealth management is about. Here's a case study. And so I learned a little bit more about those different fields and ended up saying, hey, private wealth management, that seems like something interesting. It has like the investing side and the finance side, but it also is really relationship based. So I thought, okay, that could be a good thing for me to maybe do a good first career. So I ended up interning there and then joining full time after graduating.
Okay.
So really the internship was kind of like a 10 week interview.
Okay. Got it.
So I did that for 2.5 years and it was a great first job. I learned a ton. I'm thankful that I know a bit more about finance, but I realized after 2.5 years when I was making the decision to try and become an associate and, you know, stay there longer than kind of the two-year analyst program, I decided it was a little bit too esoteric for me. It wasn't something I wanted to do long term. But during that time, a lot of the people that I helped prospect, so part of what I did as an analyst was investing and actually trading, but part of it was prospecting for new clients. And we're in Silicon Valley, and most of them were entrepreneurs, were in the tech space, whether at large companies or their own startups. And so that's actually when I became interested in tech.
Oh, okay.
So that's sort of how I made the initial transition to being in the tech industry.
From Isaiah, too, like, what were the key players in your success?
Yeah, so going into college, I knew for sure that really the only thing that I wanted to do was make sure to be around computers as much as possible. So I didn't know exactly what computer science was at the time. I just chose the major that had the word computer in it.
Right? So, as most of us do in high school.
Exactly,
like,
right?
Let's do that one.
Good thing you didn't end up with a computer repair degree.
Exactly. It worked out. Put the finger on the right one. So. But going into college, I actually was already involved in an organization called NSBE, which is the National Society of Black Engineers. So they have a NSBE Juniors program where you can sign up as a high school student. And because my older sister had already gone through college, she had many friends who were in NSBE. And she said, hey, you need to sign up for this, you know, before you even get to college. So by the time I got there, you know, it was very easy to just, you know, work myself into the chapter of NSBE at Penn.
Yeah.
And that's where I met a lot of the key influencers and the key people who played a big role in me, you know, landing a job at Google, for example. So there was a guy there actually at the time when I got there. He was the president of NSBE. His name is Jarrell Wade. Mm-hmm. We just became friends. He's doing really awesome entrepreneurial stuff now, too. But at the end of the day, he'd met another guy named Marcus Mitchell, who was an engineering director in the Google New York office. Marcus told him, hey, if you meet any young students who might be interested in this, you know, send them my way.
Mm.
So not only was I, you know, in NSBE traveling around to the different conferences, meeting people from Google, meeting people from Apple, different companies, but I had Jarrell, who had the direct, you know, contact to Marcus, who ended up being, like, just awesome all around.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I had actually already applied to an internship at Google, so I'd given them my resume that way. But I'd also attended the NSBE conferences. Mm. I met a lot of the, you know, recruiters and different engineers there. I'd handed resumes out there. Mm. They ended up being awesome, you know, invited me to the different, you know, Google events at the NSBE conference.
Yeah.
And, you know, all I said was, hey, yeah, you know, I was on the phone with Marcus. You know, they were like, what? You know, Marcus? Yeah. I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, come to this party. Like, come hang out. Awesome, right? So from, you know, meeting the president of NSBE, from networking at the different conferences, my resume ended up in the hands of many different people at the company.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always a good thing to meet someone new, but it wasn't new for them, right?
Yeah.
That was really, I think NSBE played a key role in all the people involved there.
Yeah, I love that all three of you have spoken about internships or sort of these affinity groups, these associations, these pipeline programs from MLT to NSBE to, you know, things that you're doing on campus. Because I think a lot of times, I remember I went to the Rochester Institute of Technology and, you know, computer science, software engineering majors, they were the first to drop like flies, especially in our communities of like people of color and women. You would just see them kind of go. And I think those organizations and the internships play such a critical role in building that efficacy and giving you a support network of people to just kind of keep moving you forward and pushing you forward, as well as like very tangibly connecting you with some of these opportunities.
Very true.
And so can you speak about, I guess, like moments where you kind of realized the power of that?
So I had this professor who was very influential in my life. And I think at the time I didn't realize what it was that I needed to sort of succeed. I didn't know what the steps were. I didn't know what the next step was.
Mm.
And I think now thinking back about like what, you know, because a lot of mentoring relationships or, you know, they're not formal, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You do see those more, I think, in people are starting to talk more about it now.
Yeah.
But for me back then, it was, you know, and I didn't even think of it
that way
at the time. But having someone just sort of tell me, like, you're doing the right things, like, keep doing this, and, like, I'll show you what the next step is, or I can help guide you along. And without that person, I think I wouldn't necessarily have gotten, you know, the next internship that really inspired me to say, oh, I can do this.
Yeah.
Mm. I can be successful at this. And, you know, that led to everything that followed after it.
For me, I would think about, so at Stanford, the one thing that I've realized looking back on my experiences there and then also as an alum is how important the alumni network is.
Mm.
And I didn't think about that going there. I wasn't like, oh, let me pick this school because of the network. I didn't know what that meant. But the resources that we had there, and I'm specifically thinking about the moment when I realized I needed to have a good resume and what that meant.
Yeah.
Because I'll meet lots of talented people now and I'll look at their resume and I'm like, Oh my God.
I'm interviewing for interns right now and it is, oh my God.
These are people I know who I'm like, I would work with you.
You're actually amazing in real life,
exactly.
But this resume.
Yeah. And so I worked at the Black Community Services Center at Stanford. And one of the things we did is there were lots of services available to everyone, but sometimes we would, it still feels like a big place. Even though Stanford's not huge, right? Going to college, it's still like this new place and you don't even know how to take advantage of services that are there.
Yeah.
So sometimes we would say, hey, come to, we would call it the Black House, and we're going to have one of the career development people like come here specifically to look at our resumes. And this one lady, her name's Vita Jeffries, she went to Stanford and then had been working there for probably like 20 years. And she spent one Saturday afternoon, this is like not her normal working hours, just fixing my resume, right? Because I needed a resume also to apply for MLT, Managed Leadership for Tomorrow. And I just remember that was pretty critical because, one, I figured out how to also critique other people's resumes, but I had just something that I could now give to people with in confidence, saying, okay, this displays, like, what I've done. And I think that was a huge pivotal point. And if someone hadn't, like, spent that time to sit down with me and show me how to do that, that's why now I'll do it for other people. Because if you don't have that, it's just very hard. Even if you are able to network and you meet people, if you don't have something to, like, send to them and they can look at, I think that makes a huge difference. And a lot of people don't have that coming out of college, I've found. Even if they're talented, have gone to a great school, they still might not have that.
No, definitely, definitely. Having worked in HR a little bit, I saw that to be true, too, because there's kind of its own, like, art form and world to putting together a resume and kind of going through the job search process that isn't really always, to your point, reflective of your actual skill level and expertise. So that's a really good point.
Yeah. And while we're talking about, like, the people who have helped you, I kind of want to hear about, like, the mentorship side and how you kind of pay that forward. Like, Isaiah, I know you just came here from a hackathon, so can you tell us a little bit about how you, like, are helping the next generation of techies break in?
Definitely. So that's actually related to the last question, too, you know, talking about when you realized how pivotal something like NSBE was. And you hit it on the head. It actually was when I went back as a Googler and, you know, was involved at the career fair from the employer side of the table. Right. And at that point, you know, you see the world from the other side and you realize what the important things were for you as a student to do, you know, when you were approaching people at career fairs. Right. So, you know, the entire skill set that NSBE prepared us with, you realize how vital that was for us actually, you know, landing these types of jobs and things like that. And in terms of, you know, mentorship now, one of my favorite groups that I work with a lot is All Star Code. So you may have heard of Black Girls Code and, and different organizations like that. All Star Code is the version for young black men. And I could only imagine how awesome that would have been for me as a high school student to not only pick a major that had the word computer in it, but have hacked and built and done, you know, really, really interesting things with software. You know, back then I was tinkering around, but I didn't know what kind of, you know, what that all meant. But in terms of the mentorship, like you said, I just came back from a hackathon. Out of All Star Code, there's this really, really awesome group of young students who have an entrepreneurial spirit and taken it to the next level, where they form their own organization called Young Hackers, where they throw hackathons to for high school students around the city. Right, and the one we just came from yesterday had something like 600 people there. And they're doing this all themselves, like completely student run. You know. These kids are amazing, and they're getting because they're having these sorts of leadership opportunities to, you know, to plan events, to you know, and they're building apps at these things, and they're teaching students how to build apps. They run workshops, right? So, in a general sense, you know, hackathon, sometimes you come there with a lot of skills and you build something. Sometimes you come with, you know, more introductory level, and they teach the students how to do that, right? So so it's kind of like my role in that is to kind of help them help other people, right? Also be there as a mentor, give the industry level experience to the situation, because they're getting into schools now like Stanford, Harvard, et cetera. And when they get to college, they're going to need that kind of industry level, you know, experience to go along with it. So so the idea for me as a mentor for All Star Code is to continue to provide leadership opportunities for the students to do things like this. And then also just, you know, talk about my college experience, for example.
I think it's so important, especially as you're younger, just exposure and awareness of some of these career trajectories and, like, opportunities, because they didn't exist 10 years ago. A lot of, you know, user experience, things like that, they didn't exist until recently. And so learning that this is a viable path for you as a student in elementary school or middle school, I think is so critical into just kind of forming and shaping your idea of what you might want to be when you grow up.
All right, now we're gonna have a little break, a little break. So, Joy, have you, I know you've heard of this, the whole work wife, work husband situation.
I have.
We're gonna define it for those of you who are out of the know. I went to the Wikipedias.
Yes.
A work spouse refers to a coworker, usually of the opposite sex, with whom one shares a special relationship, having bonds similar to those of a marriage. So you know, basically, like the person that like supports you,
yeah,
you know, sees to your, you know, HR approved needs.
Okay.
HR approved.
My question is like, what is the line of like being appropriate?
I don't know, because I ain't never had one.
I've never had one either. And it's
I don't know anyone who has had one.
Oh my
God,
my boyfriend has all the work wives.
Oh, does he?
All the work wives. And on the one end, like, I appreciate it because I don't have time. You know, it's like, I'm at work, like, whatever, deal with it. But on the flip side, one day he told me, because I think I saw this on a show and someone was like, they brought food. I have an issue with other women cooking. I have this just issue.
Man.
Yes. So then I was like, has anyone done that for you? And multiple plates.
Multiple
plates.
Lunch, dinner, breakfast.
It's okay if you like happen to order some extra. I'm fine with that. But you bring in food from home, girl.
You were at home thinking about this man when you were there.
And that's the line. I think that's where we have the line. When you are out of work prepping.
Cosign.
For this.
I'm going to go ahead and put a stamp and cosign that with
girl,
you.
Girl, watch yourself. Because the company Christmas party is coming and I have an invite. I'm just saying.
Oop. I do want to, you guys have, you know, you all went to really incredible schools. You kind of had access to good programs, things like that. Definitely worked hard at it. But I want to talk maybe with you, Michael, a little bit since you came from this checkered background. For those of us who feel like for whatever reason our history or education is marred or we don't have access or we're not at a top-notch school that Google's coming and recruiting to, how do you break into a competitive field like tech? What, you know, what do you do? Is it affiliating with these networks? What's the answer?
For me, the biggest thing was just kind of finding out what I needed to do. Because before, you know, when I was kind of going in and out of school for a while and not really, wasn't really focused on anything. So it was always, you know, if somebody asked me what I was going to be doing, I'd say like, oh, I want to be involved in building software. I want to be a software engineer, or I want to be a programmer, whatever that means. But if they had said like, okay, so, you know, 6 months from now or a year from now, like, how are you going to be closer?
Right.
And I would say like, I don't really know. And, you know, it wasn't until I sort of figured out, you know, how to sort of just keep, you know, just say, all right, just focusing on the end game for me, you know, that was important. But like saying, all right, it had to be very concrete steps. Like first, all right, I'm going to complete this, you know, I'm going to complete a community college program. Then it was, all right, I'm going to get into a better school. Okay, I'm going to just figure out what classes I need to take, who I need to talk to, and I'm just going to work. That was also the trick for me was realizing that, because I was a little bit older at this point, was that like, oh, these are like 18 and 19 year old kids. They don't know how to work hard.
Yeah.
But I'm like 25. Like, I can just outwork these kids.
Yeah, exactly. You know? You got that part down.
I don't know if that's you know, encouraging for everyone or not. But and it was like, oh, well, if I do that, then it just, you know, made everything so much easier.
Yeah.
You know, that was for me, that was like my, just kept putting the next step.
The next step,
And surrounding myself, making sure I was like, you know, if I was hanging out with the students who I could identify were, they had already figured out what the next step was.
Yeah.
So I was talking to the professors.
That's a major key right there.
Or in our case, the one professor who I keep coming back to who had like, he had lots of industry connections. And that was huge because there's so many professors who, they come from academia and, you know, they sort of, their sort of mentality.
They're not connected.
Like, yeah, they're ivory tower. They're just thinking sort of like, okay, I want to get my research done.
Yeah.
I have these classes to conduct, but they're not really my passion.
Yeah.
This one professor I did have, his whole, he was only, you know, only doing lecturing.
Yeah.
And he had come from industry, and like that was just the magic bullet for me because it connected me with someone who cared, who was passionate, and got me access to internships.
So what I'm always interested in when I interview people from a different field is what is the hustle for your field for rising through the ranks? Because when I started working in PR, I forgot her name, but she was seasoned in the field and she told me that like if key for success is like it doesn't happen in the office. Like, you need to go to all these after-work events. You need to go to these parties. And you need to interact and network. And that was a light bulb for me And then when I'm now working at a dance company, I was like shocked to find out that these professional dancers, like they're coming to our classes really as a sort of audition for like these master choreographers that just teach a class. They're like, I'm really like coming so maybe they'll notice me so I can move to the next level. So I'm wondering, like, what is like the thing that's not on paper that kind of helps you excel through your field? Is it really just like being good at your job? Like, is that enough?
I would say that in any corporate job, that that's not necessarily the case. I think it also depends on what role, right? Because we're coming from like three different roles, whether it's engineering, user experience, product management. So granted, like in each of these, you have to perform well. Right? Yeah. And that's like the baseline. I do think there's something to be said, and I've had this issue in my career in terms of like being the person who's heads down and working really hard but doesn't promote your work and that can happen, right? You're the person like, I know how to work really, really hard, but no one necessarily knows about it, or they maybe like forget you. And I know that's a huge issue a lot of times for women and minorities, just being like, no, I'm gonna work hard, I know how to do that, but you don't know, and you think maybe promoting yourself is like bragging, or self-promotion seems like a bad word. So I think that one, we're in like different fields, right? So I think it depends on what field you're in, but also it depends on what type of company, right? The difference between working at a large company versus a startup. Those are just two different areas. So I think when we think about tech, we have to kind of divide the two.
Yeah.
Well, what about yours?
So I'm thinking, now, for me, I think you have to become the expert or the go-to person in some area, right? So for, you know, thinking about my past experience, so at Google, when I was working as a researcher, I became more of the go-to person for being a researcher who could look at some quantitative data. And that wasn't something that our team necessarily had as much of. Or I was the person who could do more of, like, the survey research. So just becoming, you know, an expert or go-to person in some specific area, I think that's super important. And then also promoting that, right? Whether, and I'm thinking in, like, a large company context, meaning, hey, I'm going to maybe put on a workshop about this or a class, or I'm going to come up with a presentation that is long-lasting that other people can reference and they'll associate it with me. So creating kind of deliverables, meaning like reports or videos that have what we would call a long shelf life. Like they're not about one particular tactical project, but they're like very, very much more strategic and people can reference them for a long time.
Nice.
Definitely on the kind of engineering and product management side, it definitely is about, you know, how many projects, but not only how many projects you've worked on, but the complexity of those projects. And, you know, were they outside of your normal classwork, for example? So if you're a student, thing that we, you know, people like to see, you know, employers like to see is that you spent time outside of the classroom doing computer science or building a project or in the open source community, which clearly shows you have a passion for this beyond, you know, what everybody gets in class, right? And then I think not only having those projects, but having those projects be impactful, right? So there are ways, you can look at impact in many different ways. The way it impacts your team or impacts your company, or how it impacts a user's life, or impact in terms of how many people is your application or project touching, and how many people is your application helping. So one, your project has that impact, but then the next step is being able to measure that impact, right? Like if you, so, you know, Amber mentioned being able to promote yourself. Saying you did something is one thing. Saying you did something and it impacted so many lives in a particular way is an entirely different step. So I think the people who separate themselves and make it in this sort of industry are ones that can, you know, really measure and show the impact in a way that, that promotes the project itself, right? And promotes the complexity and just the all-around awesomeness of what your project is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You guys all, I think, are very passionate about diversity in tech and representation, things like that. What, you know, we hear in the media all the time about the gaps at many major companies, not calling anyone out, but what, you know, what's the solve for that? And also in the spaces that you currently exist, how do you find a sense of community?
Well, speaking as the non-minority. So this is more about, I think, just my perspective on diversity, but and I think this is actually a pretty common perspective, especially in technology, is that, you know, there's this gap, there's this problem. And a lot of people say, like, well, you know, especially if you're coming from being, you know, a white male, you think, well, I didn't really do anything to cause this problem. As long as I'm a fair individual and I just sort of do the right things by the people around me, then, like, you know, that's my obligation.
Yeah.
And we, you know, there's a lot of concern, whether sometimes it's false or not, about, you know, reverse racism and these problems that don't actually exist. And I think what's interesting is just sort of, and, you know, maybe it's totally obvious, but just listening to other people talk about their experiences. Because even at Google, you know, a couple years ago, I would have said, hey, we're a company that has got it right, you know, and everything is great and everything will just work out in time. And then you just start listening to stories as people have been talking about more and more, you know, the problem. And, you know, people are now being empowered, I think, to speak up about it. And it's not... it's not just as simple as, like, you know, we kind of set everything in motion and it will fix itself. It's like we have to really actively work on these problems and we can't just sit back because they're not going to get better unless we really focus on them.
Yeah, be deliberate.
Yeah, exactly.
I would agree. I think the part you mentioned specifically about sharing stories, that makes things real. You know, like, I think giving people specific examples of one, people's, like, experiences in the workplace, but also I'm thinking even about, you know, specifically at Google or other tech companies, you know, we are creating products that so many people use and touch so many different people's lives. And I think it's important to have stories around when we don't have diversity and different perspectives and different backgrounds, in those people who are creating things, how that can just have so many issues. And we've seen examples of those before where it's like, who created this? It kind of reminds me of, like, when I was younger, my sister was taking kind of like a standardized test because there's also issues with tests not being culturally competent. And and she took a test and the test said something like, what do you put on your head? And I think it was supposed to be like hat was just like the bank answer. And my sister was like, hair grease. And everyone was like, what? Yes, we wouldn't even think, right? It's just like, you just think it's the norm. And even sometimes for me, I think, oh, this is the norm for me. And when other people don't get it, I'm like, wait. And that comes out in the way that products are produced. And like UX, because one, UX is something, a job that people don't really know about as much. I didn't know about it until after being at Google. It's sometimes even less diverse. And we're creating like the user experience and like all these very important things. And it's a really, it's not a diverse area. And so you're just missing out on creating something that is for everyone. It kind of reminds me even of accessibility, right? When you get accessibility it's easier for everybody.
And
it makes a huge impact on everyone. It's not just for that specific group of people that you're improving their lives. It really impacts everyone. I think the same way about diversity.
This is the topic I've been, you know, just very, very interested in throughout my entire career in terms of, you know, you talk about, you know, what can you do from the other side? This particular thing is where I feel like, well, if I can, you know, be that person that would have been awesome for me to have talked to when I were, you know, or for the person to have interviewed me or to have built that product that I use, right? But overall, in terms of the solution, there isn't just one. Like most issues, it's a very complex one. The first, though, that has been the hot topic for many, many years is the pipeline issue, right? It's like, we have to fix the pipeline. What that means is, are there enough talented minorities who are actually applicants to these companies? Like, is the pipeline to getting these jobs actually a diverse pipeline? That's one part of the issue. So I think companies in the beginning, you know, started attacking that by making sure that either the schools that they were recruiting from were diverse and that they were doing a good job of, you know, not holding any bias there. Make sure maybe even open the gates up a little bit wider and go to schools that they hadn't gone to before, right? And making sure that your pipeline is actually representative of who you like to hire. The issue I think we're running into now is that a lot of companies think that that's the only part of the problem. So a buddy of mine, actually a colleague who I worked with for a long time, named Marvin Stickle, he worked as basically, you know, an industry level recruiting lead, a lead specialist for recruiting minorities and inclusion, right? So a lot of people have put the words diversity and inclusion together. Mm-hmm. And these are two very related but two separate issues. Mm-hmm. The second part of the problem that I'm getting to that, and I mentioned Marvin because he just wrote an article about it, is the hiring part of it, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay, great. Now let's say in an ideal situation, we've got a completely diverse pipeline. Bam, it's fixed. Let's say that. There's still a stage at the hiring process that's completely broken when your hiring managers are not of a diverse population, right? So great, we've brought you all these students and all of these applicants who are from all over the place, but the people who are trying to hire them can't relate to them in ways. Yeah. And we all know that a big part of bringing someone onto the team that you're on, that you want to work with, is a bit of relatability. Mm-hmm. So if we don't start to actually attack the hiring processes and try and remove some of the either conscious or unconscious bias mm-hmm. that goes on there, then you still have a broken process.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have done a great job of increasing the diversity of the pipeline.
Yeah.
I think there's still a lot of work to do in terms of fixing the hiring process.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
So we're always talking about our winning circles, our personal. We kind of consider this show like your career confidants, your group chat. Who is in each of your, like, winning circles? Like, who do you text when you have a work thing?
There's a PM at Google. His name's Mark Ewing. He's awesome. He's been a PM for a long time. So in my transition into the role, anything I needed around, like, learning what that process was, I would definitely hit him up immediately.
Nice.
I have a group chat with my friends called Black Girl Magic.
Yes.
It's actually Black Gum Magic. G-U-H. So that usually, you know, that's even if there's like tough times at work, I might send a little text there.
That's the go-to. Love it.
I would also say one of my friends, Janelle, will be talking on Instagram, Facebook, G-Chat, and text maybe about work-related stuff.
That sounds like me and Courtney's DMs. Yeah.
Those are probably the top two right now.
Nice, nice. Michael?
Well, my wife, definitely. But
yeah, I was going to say. I wasn't going to say nothing.
Now I look like a good guy. But,
yeah. We don't talk.
Well, obviously my wife would be the first person I would talk to.
Every time.
His wife is in the studio.
She's looking at me right now. But no, I also have friends at work who are people who are at like a similar level mm-hmm. who you can sort of just unload stuff on. And we all have a similar perspective.
Yeah.
And that helps because, you know, even maybe you have a good relationship with your manager, but you mm-hmm. can't complain about your manager to
right.
your manager.
Correct.
And then, you know, people maybe who are at a lower level, like you don't want to make it look bad for them. So you sort of have to, you know, just find people who are at your sort of similar level and you can sort of just unload on them.
Nice. Nice. Thank you all so much for stopping by. This was incredible.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, this was awesome. Thanks.
It's time for Ask Joblogs, which is the segment of the show where we address your career and life questions. It's our favorite segment because we get to hear from you. Submit your questions to us anytime at joblogs.com/askjoblogs. What do we have today?
Let's see. We have a question from Alex.
Ooh, Alex. Love her.
What I'm really loving about the podcast is your embracing of the creative side hustle. I understand the podcast for both of you is a side hustle in itself, and you mm-hmm. have full-time jobs and potential career paths outside of Joblogs. And I feel like that's why I relate so well to the content you present to your audience, from personal commentary to the people you choose to interview. How necessary are business cards these days? Do folks still use them? And when do you have, and when you do have side hustles and passions and projects, how do you decide what's most important to include on your business card? These could be naive questions, but I know for myself, I just went through drafts on drafts on drafts of how I would want my business card to represent me. And your advice is greatly appreciated.
This is a good question.
I feel like business cards are in a very gray area right now.
They are, because they're dated.
Yeah.
As all hell, for sure. Like, business cards are so antiquated. And yeah. With LinkedIn, I wish we could just completely do away with
when
them.
When I read this question, I was like, LinkedIn, where's the technology here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I agree. But I will say this. Like, we have business cards for job logs.
Yeah.
And it's a good question because I feel like we went through this phase as well. The first batch of business cards we had printed were just like name, signature, yeah. Same template as everybody mm-hmm. else's. But then, you know, I realized, like, personally, when I was passing them out would be, like, career fairs to students or people who had no familiarity with what job logs was, and the name itself doesn't explain it.
Yeah.
So I really ended up, like, needing to use them to explain the show.
Yeah, I like that of using it as more of a leave behind.
Yeah.
Because it's more than like a business card. It's like, especially if you have a creative side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's kind of like a piece of your work.
Yeah,
so I think
exactly.
Using it in that way.
Yeah, exactly. Like really a sliver or almost like a mini promotional flyer, to be honest.
Right. So like if you are an artist, I would have mm-hmm. like one side of it be your artwork.
Art, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Photography, let it be a picture.
Yeah.
I think ours describes the show in summary and tells you where you can listen and then mm-hmm. has like our social handles, both yeah. of our names and like contact info. So I think that's one, figuring out where you have use for it, whether it's – and then the other thing that I realized too is like I always hand them out – as after I've had a conversation with someone and told them verbally, it's the leave behind
yes.
because you're not going to remember how to spell job logs
yeah.
or anything. With my work business cards, it's also an interesting dynamic because on the work side, I've printed them so many times and don't use them because I work at a company and a brand that everyone recognizes. I found the power dynamic is different. So if I'm in a space when I'm networking, you're likely pitching me,
mm-hmm.
so I don't need to have the business card because mm-hmm. you'll look me up on LinkedIn or something, or I can just give you my email address and
yeah.
you will follow up and send the email. Whereas with job logs, we're usually pitching other people or trying
That's
to
true.
Form partnerships. And so, you know, I'm kind of the one, like, we're the ones pursuing that
yeah.
relationship. And so I find that the need is kind of necessitated by, like,
yeah.
a bit of the power
That's
dynamic
a good point.
As well. And then what was my other point going to be about business cards? Oh, this one's big. So, you know, I don't have a clear yes or no on whether or not they're useful. What I will say is we have them. And it's always so comical to me when you're in a little networking circle at a function and people ask for business cards. I love being able to pull them out and have one.
Yeah.
And it's the weirdest thing when people next to you are like, oh, I should print them or I did print them or
yeah,
I forgot to print.
Yeah.
Like, that's weird.
Yeah.
So my perspective is it depends. I think business cards separate hobbyists from people who are really serious about their hustle. I think it's one way to do that, right?
Yeah.
Like your website's another, you know, whatever else you have is another. So I think it's up to you to decide. You can get them done for as little as $25
yeah.
on overnightprints.com, Vistaprint, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, and I've noticed a lot of people now will, like, get me on the social, like, as I'm talking to you. So, like, if you're
right,
a Twitter person,
right.
like, what's your handle? And they'll,
right.
like, add me, like, in front of my face.
Right.
So I know that this notification is them. So that's another way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool, but also if you, like, want the email address to really slide through the DMs with an opportunity, I think,
yeah.
you know. I just think it depends. But to me, if it's something new, it can't hurt.
Yeah,
if you have, if you can find $25, $30 and you're serious about what you're doing, I don't think it hurts.
Sure. Okay, before we go, this week in adulting, we're going to share some tips on how we're becoming better, fully functioning,
responsible
adults.
Yes.
What's the tip?
Bedtime.
Bedtime.
Set a bedtime.
Real.
Yes, yes. Real adult moves out here. You know.
Parent yourself.
11:30. Because you need to regulate your sleep. And I, you know, full disclosure, don't do any of that. Which is why I struggle.
Work in progress.
That's why I like struggle out of bed and like run to get ready in 20 minutes in the morning. So definitely putting yourself on a schedule because we're getting older.
Yeah. And I don't subscribe to that whole team no sleep. Yeah. Sleep, we grind
24/7.
Yes, I am sleep. And my brain is, loving every minute of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Get your sleep. Set a bedtime.
Okay. So that's real. I support that. Mine is, I discovered this because I dropped, at the improv brunch, I dropped my phone in the toilet.
Oh, exciting.
Because it was lit. And so I was without a phone for a day. It was scary at first. Mm. Like, I was telling my roommate, like, I'm nervous leaving this door. Like, I'm
really?
Nervous.
Why?
Because you just always have it. So I'm like, girl, how do I know I'm on time? Like, I don't even know.
What is
I don't
want
to watch.
What is like, a clock? I don't know.
But at the same time, it's kind of liberating. Mm. So I've been flexing my do not disturb feature lately. Mm-hmm. And that's like, if I'm working on something, like, just the act of like texting or doing something else, like it takes your brain away from it. It lacks focus.
That's true.
So I think like don't be so afraid to be off the grid and like disconnect for a little bit.
Mm.
Flip side of that. Respecting like you don't need access to people all the time.
Mm.
I have a friend who shall go unnamed.
Me.
No. No.
Oh, really?
I know a friend. I'm not even going to put him out
there.
But he texts me, and then if I don't respond, will send me ellipses. Well, go the dot, dot, dot. Sir.
Yes, yes.
Like, you will respond
Wait, I might
right
have to
now.
Start that. That's excellent. I'm
no,
writing that down.
No, that is so extra. Do not do that. If it's an emergency, call and say it's an emergency.
True.
But don't expect people to just give folks space. For adulting boundaries.
Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Job Blogs.
Yes, full house today.
Yes, many thanks to Amber, Isaiah, Michael for stopping by and joining us. And, you know, in the spirit of celebrating relationships that make it happen, thanks to Marnie Smith for connecting all of us.
Marnie knows everybody.
She sure does. Catch us around the web, per usual, at jawblogs.com or at jawblogs on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook.
Yeah. And don't forget to tweet us. We want to hear about when you get a new job, a promotion, you know, big or small professional milestones. We want to celebrate you.
Yes.
Share the love.
Shouts to y'all.
Oh, and don't forget to rate us on iTunes. That's what really helps us grow and kind of show that we're having an impact.
Yeah, and also it's like, you know, a preview to everyone else who hasn't tuned in yet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Picker-upper on my week.
Yeah. Courtney, what are you around the web?
I'm at Cleave Out Loud on Instagram, Twitter, and sometimes a Snap.
Mm-hmm. And I am Hey Miss Parker, HEYMISSPARKERR. Thanks, y'all.
See you next week.
I don't know. What should I sing?
I don't know. Jingles off the top of my head. Any requests?
Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. All right. Here comes the sun. Do-do-do-do. Here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right. Do, 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 do.
So you're the guy at karaoke that's just like blowing everyone out of the water. You're that one person.
I've done that before, yeah.
That's awesome. How has that experience, like, how's that extracurricular just sort of fun thing at work connected you with people?
It's great because it's totally unrelated to my job, you know, a thing in my life, and singing is just, you know, a really good stress reliever and just sort of a totally different outlet for creativity and energy that is nothing to do with what I do on a day-to-day basis. So it's just great. And, you know, I can be a diva and kind of let that side of me out, hopefully, and then not subject my coworkers to it too much.
Love it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.